Well, this morning, I want to draw our attention to a story that we know well. And I'm a big believer in the idea that revisiting biblical narratives, biblical accounts that we know very well and we're very familiar with can sometimes be a rich endeavor because sometimes we know them so well, we overlook the gems of how God really is at work in our midst or certainly in the fabric of the story that we see. So I'd like, if you will, to return to 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. And for this morning, we'll look at verses 38 through 39. But before we read those verses, let me give us a sense of the backdrop here. This drama is taking place in a beautiful part of Israel, the coastal plain of Israel called the Valley of Elah. And it's in that place that the Israelite army, led by Saul, is at odds with, at war with, and more specifically at a standoff with, the Philistine army. And they've been in a situation almost, if you will, a deadlock. And the Israelite army knows the strength of the army of the Philistines. And they are wary of trying to start out with an assault, and therefore they're not certain that they can do that. So they are standing off in this valley. So every day, one of their soldiers, we know him, his name is Goliath, and the biblical account has him at possibly in excess of 9 feet tall. And it says that every day he comes out into the valley and he taunts the Israelites. It says he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." Every day, twice a day, Goliath would come out in the valley and taunt the Israelites. They did that for 40 some odd days. For around 81 times, the Israelites hear this taunt. And in the midst of all of this, when they saw Goliath out there and sized him up, literally and figuratively, they pretty much realized they really didn't have anybody in the army who could take him on those terms. Well, Jesse had some sons. And for the most part, Jesse's sons were in the battle. They were on the front lines. But the youngest of those sons was David. And David's responsibility, because David was the youngest, and David seemed, by at least Jesse's account, to have his mind on things other than battle, if you will. David's responsibility was to, A, tend to the flocks and the sheep, but then on occasion take supplies so that his brothers who were on the front line could have them and bring back word to Jesse and the family how the brothers were doing. David did this, and when he got down to the line and he heard Goliath's taunts, he got to thinking, and he realized, I can handle this. So his brother gets upset with him, sends him back, and then Saul hears about it, and Saul lets David come before him, and then Saul and David have a conversation about David going into battle, and that leads us to the 38th verse of the 17th chapter. Hear now the word of the Lord. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." In the King James, the word is, "I've not proved them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome. And he despised him, and he said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down in the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, without a sword in his hand. He struck down the Philistine and killed him. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading, hearing, and discerning of God's word. We hear this story often, and as I said, we know it well. When we hear somebody talk about a David versus Goliath battle, we immediately think that it speaks to us about an underdog facing overwhelming odds and coming into a situation that most likely, by anybody's estimation, wouldn't turn out well. And that's what this looks like, I think, probably, to our at least envisioning it at first. We see Goliath, all nearly 9 feet of him. We see little, ruddy David. We see them on the battlefield, and we see Goliath with an immeasurable amount of his army, over 100 pounds, 5,000 shekels, I believe it says, of armor, a heavy, imposing spear, and all David has is a sling and 5 smooth stones. Now, Saul, I think, finally got to a point of realizing, because none of his other men felt like they were up to the battle or up to the charge, decided he would, even maybe if it was against his better judgment, let David go into this conflict. But Saul thought he would at least apply some measure of wisdom, at least as he understood it, to the situation, and he gave David his armor. So we can only imagine that it was probably the highest quality of armor of all the Israelite army. And certainly, everyone would expect that this high-quality armor would serve the situation well. So David puts on the armor. But there's a problem. First of all, I can only imagine what it must have looked like. I gather from the description that David, probably of physical bearing, was smaller than Saul, not as girthy maybe, possibly, I don't know. But here we have this image of David in this oversized armor and this heavy sword. David says, I can't use this because I'm not used to it. I haven't used this before. I haven't proved it, if you will. So he takes off the armor, takes and puts down the sword. Now, meanwhile, let's go back to Goliath for a minute. As I said a minute ago, Goliath was, by estimations, possibly nearly 9 feet tall. And we can only imagine that he stood out not only in the midst of the Philistine army, but probably in the midst of just about any fighting force that anybody knew of at that time. So what an imposing figure Goliath must have been. So here he is in the Valley of Elah, taunting the Israelites, saying, bring to me whoever you want to bring, and I will feed their flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. So here comes David. And Goliath sees him. And Goliath probably is saying, oh, no, they didn't. They're sending this little ruddy kid to take on me? And wait a minute, if my eyes don't deceive me, I don't even see a sword or a spear. He's got a staff, a stick, a shepherd's staff. Put a pin in that for a moment. And so Goliath is certainly not intimidated. He's insulted. As you bring somebody like this to fight me? Am I a dog that you bring somebody with sticks to fight me? David lets him know. You've got your sword and your spear and your armor bearer, but I come in the name of the Lord. Now. That's the picture. That's the tableau we all know very well. We know that, in fact, as I said before, David and Goliath have taken up a place in popular culture so much so that when we hear that term, we think about what it means as it relates to what a battle might be, and the names David and Goliath are familiar to us. I don't know about you, but I grew up with watching Davy and Goliath on television. You remember that? Davy and Goliath, the little boy and the dog? Well, are you ready for this? We've been getting it all wrong. Huh? We've been thinking that David was the underdog. We've been thinking that David was at the disadvantage. We've been thinking that the odds were stacked against David. But now, if you will, let's look a little more closely at this story. And by the way, just so you know, I don't want anybody to think that they've got a scandal that they're ready to disclose now. Nothing, by way, in this day and age is fully original. There's a wonderful author by the name of Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote a really well-known book called Blink. But he most recently, or at least one of his most recent books, was a book on David and Goliath. Malcolm Gladwell, I recommend and I refer him to you not only for that book, or those two books, but any and all of his other writings. He's a man of faith and brings a lot of depth and perception. So he's written about David and Goliath, and his musings on this have informed what I'm trying to share with you this morning. So as I said, we kind of get it wrong, because we think that David is at the disadvantage. But first, before we even unpack this, listen to David. Does David sound like he thinks he's at a disadvantage? No. David says, you come with your sword and you come with your spear and you come with your armor bearer, but I come in the name of the Lord. The psalmist says later on that some will come with chariots and some will come with horses, but we come in the name of the Lord. So we need to probably examine our perspective if we think when somebody says that, that somehow they still believe that they're at a disadvantage. So David says to Goliath, I may not be coming equipped in the same way you are, but I'm coming with an advantage. Now, let's talk about that advantage. David comes before Goliath with his shepherd's staff and his sling. The two instruments, if you will, that David has been using on a regular basis to protect the flock. You didn't hear what I just said. David comes before Goliath, not with implements, if you will, solely of war and destruction, but implements of protection and nurture. A shepherd's crook and his sling. A sling, by the way, that David has had to use, and he talks about it when he talks to Saul and tries to convince Saul to let him go into the battle. He says, you know, that I've gone up against lions and bears with my sling, and I've struck them. And basically what David lets Saul know is that I've been in situations where I've had to strike these animals if they were going to threaten the sheep. And then I've been able to overtake the lions and the bears. Now, maybe some of that might have been a little bit of an embellishment of the reality, but the point still is that the element that David had, the sling and the shepherd's crook, were what he used and what he needed and what God had provided, if you will, for him to protect the flock to which he had been entrusted. And because David had been doing this a long time, he had developed and cultivated a particular skill with the sling that put him on par with all of those who were in the military who had the same responsibility. Now, in the armies of that day, there were usually three types of soldiers. There were those on horseback, the cavalry. There were those who were heavy artillery. And that's what Goliath was, the ones who were situated for close-in, heavy hand-to-hand combat. And then there were those who were the artillery. And those were the archery experts with bow and arrow and those with the sling. Now, put out of your mind the idea that this sling was anything like a kid's toy, because it wasn't. It wasn't a slingshot that you'd hold and pull the rubber band back or whatever. This was a pouch with two leather thongs on it, and what would happen would be is the person with the sling would take those stones or stone and put it in the pouch, and he would have the two leather thongs, and he would begin to rotate in a circle such that the speed of that sling would get to the point where it would be faster. By way of historical estimations, it would be faster than a baseball being pitched by a major league pitcher. So it would be coming a particularly strong and significant and even lethal strength. And the slingers were the people who were able to fight from strategic positions. They weren't in close-in hand-to-hand combat. They were able to position themselves and find their target and then do the work that they were called to do. So David, by virtue of his skill set, had an advantage over Goliath. And we know this by the way the story is even described, because it tells us, number one, that Goliath, if you read the text, it tells us that his armor bearer basically led him into the valley where he would stand and where he taunted for those several days and now where he was going to face David in battle. And it tells us, in essence, that Goliath was stationary in the spot that he'd chosen. And we know even by the way that it's described that Goliath says, "Come to me. Come on. Let's fight. Let's do this thing." But notice, Goliath with his heavy armor, Goliath with his heavy sword, Goliath with his heavy shield is limited to defending a single space. And maybe the first takeaway from this ought to be this, is that David never comes to where Goliath is. So maybe one of the first takeaways from this should be that when we find ourselves in conflict, when we find ourselves in struggle, and when we go to those conflicts and struggles armed with what it is that God has armed us with, we don't have to get to the level of the opposition. We don't have to get to the level of the enemy. When they go low, we can stay high. So Goliath says, come to me and let's take this on. But David has no intention. First of all, we know that the David's strength is not in taking on a 9-foot giant given his size. No, David's strength comes from using the skill that God has given him already. But there's another element to this that gets overlooked. It would have been the case then, and it probably would even be the case now, that if Goliath was anywhere close to the height that's recorded in all of this, well, yes, that was imposing, absolutely. Well, yes, that was intimidating by people's estimations, I guess, absolutely. But it also means that it's very possible, even by way of historical examination, probable that Goliath was suffering from a condition broadly called giantism, which includes a number of different physical issues that come about that cause one to grow to extraordinary heights. There's oftentimes a benign tumor that will press against the pituitary gland in one of those forms of giantism, which will cause people, in fact, the world's tallest man who died at the age of 24 was approaching 8'11" upon his death. I think actually maybe even a little over 9 feet. So even though Goliath was tall and massive and imposing, his height, his size had come about because of a physical ailment. Now, a couple of things we can possibly conjecture, and biblical historians have looked at this story and considered it and have written about this at great length. Remember that Goliath was led out to the battlefield by his armor bearer, his attendant. Some may think that that's possibly because Goliath, because again of this issue of giantism, had limited peripheral vision. Now you might think, well, how could a soldier be a soldier with limited peripheral vision? Well, if you are used to standing your ground in one spot and fighting in that one spot, I suppose, then you could do it. But this was not that kind of battle. What Goliath was entering into was not what he had bargained for. And then also, the fact that the Philistine army and Goliath were used to this idea of standoff was not what David was bringing to the point. You know, in fact, when we look back over history, most often when armies who are used to fighting in very strict and regimented lines come against armies that are used to fighting by way of guerrilla tactics, moving about in asymmetrical fashion, oftentimes those are the ones that win the battle. So here we have Goliath, who is stationary, ready to fight, burdened by his armor. Goliath, who is stationary, ready to fight, equipped with his height, but in the same measure, almost in a way limited by his height. And here we have David, who picks up 5 smooth stones. And by the way, some people say that in the Elah Valley, the particular mineral composition of that area meant that those stones had a particularly significant density to them, meaning that once they were flung, that the strength by which they hit something was even that greater. So what do we have? We have David using what God has equipped him with. The skill and the ability to take something as meager as a stone and to place it in a sling. What he had been up to this point using to protect the flock, and what he's even doing now to protect Israel. So while this is a military scenario and while it is a scene of battle, what David is really doing right now is still being a shepherd. And what God has given David the opportunity to do in this moment is not to have vanquished Goliath in the sense of military conquest, but to keep and protect Israel, which was the ultimate calling that God placed upon David anyway. So we've been thinking for the longest time that David was the underdog. But if you look more closely at this, you realize something about Goliath. What appeared to be his strength was really his weakness. His giantism, if you will, represented a physical limitation that meant he could only fight one way. The weight of his armor was such that he was mobilized or immobilized to be able to do anything other than to stand in one spot. So maybe the lesson for us this morning is, and when we come upon adversaries, when we come upon difficult situations, when we come upon things that maybe by our first estimation look like they are immeasurably unfair and weighted against us, maybe we ought to do what David did. Maybe we ought to take inventory of what we already have. Maybe we ought to consider the strengths, the skills, the depth of spirit that God has already placed and shaped and fabricated in us as much as we walk in relationship with God. And then once we realize that we aren't going into the battle unprotected, that we aren't going into the battle unarmed, again, you may come with your spears, you may come with your swords, you may come with your armor, but I come in the name of the Lord, and guess what? The Lord has a track record of faithfulness, an abiding presence in all our battles. So, once we realize that, whatever we have at our disposal, maybe it's not a sling, maybe none of us are expert in using first century, or I should say third century BCE slings. But there are those strengths, there are those talents that may look meager at first blush to you or me, that God has shaped in us, crafted in us. Some of you all in here have a wonderful spirit of selflessness. And if there's anything that can crush in advance of the enemy, it's a selflessness that reflects the selflessness of Jesus. Some of you have the capacity and the ability to put things together. In other words, almost in it was in some, like the old folk used to say, to make something out of nothing. And God honors that when we take those things that the world might think are meager and we give them over to God. And we give them and ourselves as a living sacrifice. So your assignment today is to know that yes, there are Goliaths. Yes, there are seemingly imposing battles and difficulties that are in front of us. But the enemy oftentimes is not nearly as strong as the enemy seems. And what sometimes seems to be the enemy's strength is really the root of the enemy's weakness. Oh, but they're mean. that lack of charitable spirit, that lack of giving and the lack of heart that so often faces us by way of those who are our adversaries. That's the very weakness. If you don't have a sense of spirit and heart, you're that susceptible to being defeated by love. But they're selfish. They're all about themselves. Yeah. And that selfishness can only be successful for oneself. But we serve a God whose selflessness transforms us and transforms the world. So we understand this morning that David was not the underdog. And David knew that. I come in the name of the Lord. The next time you're facing your giant, The next time your Goliath taunts you, whatever that might be, maybe it's an internal conflict, maybe it's something, a circumstance of not of your making, not of your doing, but nevertheless that confronts you. What are your five smooth stones? How has God prepared you? Some come with chariots and some come with horses, some come with spears and armor. But we have already gained the victory because we come in the name of the Lord. Let the church say amen.